long or he'll catch his death. And, too, I've got Mrs. Ormerod and Mr. Scroggy and young Julia coming over for a sitting, and there's the place to clean and all beforehand. But I'll give Mr. Shadwell your message." Crowley gave up. He tried to read a novel, but couldn't concentrate. He tried to sort his CDs into alphabetical order, but gave up when he discovered they already were in alphabetical order, as was his bookcase and his collection of soul music. He was very proud of his collection. It had taken him ages to put it together. This was real soul music. James Brown wasn't in it. Eventually, he settled down on the white leather sofa and gestured on the television. "Reports are coming in," said a worried newscaster. "Reports are, well, nobody seems to know what's going on, but reports available to us would seem to, indicate an increase in international tensions that would have undoubtedly been viewed as impossible this time last week, when everyone seemed to be getting on so nicely. This would seem at least partly due to the spate of unusual events which have occurred over the last few days. And off the coast of Japan..."
"Crowley."
"Yes," admitted Crowley.
"What the hell is going on, Crowley? What exactly have you been doing?"
"How do you mean?" Crowley asked, although he already knew.
"The boy called Warlock. We have brought him to the fields of Megiddo. The dog is not with him. The child knows nothing of the Great War. He is not our master's son."
"Ah," said Crowley.
"Is that all you can say, Crowley? Our troops are assembled. The four beasts have begun to ride, but where are they riding to? Something has gone wrong, Crowley, and it is your responsibility, and in all probability your fault. We trust you have a perfectly reasonable explanation for all this."
"Oh, yes," agreed Crowley readily. "Perfectly reasonable."
"Because you are going to have your chance to explain it all to us. You are going to have all the time there is to explain, and we will listen with great interest to everything you have to say, and your conversation, and the circumstances that will accompany it, will provide a source of entertainment and pleasure for all the damned of hell, Crowley, because no matter how racked with torment, no matter what agonies the lowest of the damned are suffering, Crowley, you will have it worse."
With a gesture, Crowley turned the set off. The dull grey-green screen continued enunciating. The silence formed itself into words.
"Do not even think about trying to escape us, Crowley. There is no escape. Stay where you are. You will be... collected."
Crowley went to the window and looked out. Something black and car-shaped was moving slowly down the street towards him. It was car-shaped enough to fool the casual observer. Crowley, who was observing very carefully, noticed that not only were the wheels not going round, but they weren't even attached to the car. It was slowing down as it passed each house. Crowley assumed that the car's passengers, neither of them would be driving, neither of them knew how, were peering out at the house numbers. He had a little time. Crowley went to the kitchen and got a plastic bucket from under the sink. Then he went back into the lounge. The infernal authorities had ceased communicating. Crowley turned the television to the wall just in case. He walked over to the Mona Lisa. Crowley lifted the picture down from the wall, revealing a safe. It was not a wall safe. It had been bought from a company that specialised in servicing the nuclear industry. He unlocked it, revealing an inner door with a dial tumble lock. He spun the dial. 4004 was the code. Easy to remember, the year he had slithered onto this stupid, marvellous planet, back when it was gleaming and new. Inside the safe were a thermos flask, two heavy PVC gloves of the kind that covered one's entire arms, and some tongs. Crowley paused. He eyed the flat nervously. There was a crash from downstairs. That had been the front door. He pulled on the gloves and gingerly took the flask and the tongs and the bucket, and, as an afterthought, he grabbed the plant mister from behind the luxurious rubber plant and headed for his office, walking like a man carrying a thermos flask full of something that might cause, if he dropped it, or even thought about dropping it, the sort of explosion that impels greybeards to make statements like, "And where this crater is now once stood the city of Washington," in SFB movies. He reached his office, nudged open the door with his shoulder. Then he bent his legs and slowly put things down on the floor. Bucket, tongs, plant mister, and finally, deliberately, the flask. A bead of sweat began to form on Crowley's forehead and trickled down into one eye. He flicked it away. Then, with care and deliberation, he used the tongs to unscrew the top of the flask. Carefully, carefully, that was it. A pounding on the stairs below him and a muffled scream. That would have been the little old lady on the floor below. He could not afford to rush. He gripped the flask with the tongs, and taking care not to spill the tiniest drop, he poured the contents into the